In the sharing, I heard a lot of things that actually touch on what I was looking at this week. Last week, we talked about how metta, which is the Pali word for loving kindness, is the foundation for all the Brahma Viharas, and that compassion, joy, and equanimity are variations of metta. So they are really linked, and there isn't... we don't have to think, is this joy or is this equanimity or is this compassion? It's a situation that if we're cultivating metta, it comes up. The situation of suffering, compassion arises in response to that. Our heart opens towards that suffering, and it has the quality of karuna. So we're going to focus today on compassion, and then Linda is going to talk about joy, the two kinds of joy. So these Brahma Viharas are essential elements in investigating the Four Noble Truths, which is the gift that the Buddha gave us to free ourselves from suffering. We notice that noble truth is that suffering exists and we're called to investigate it. So compassion helps us with that because compassion allows us to be present with suffering. So compassion is very important. And in the Tibetan tradition, the two most important aspects of their tradition are the wings, the two wings, wisdom and compassion. The first step in the Eightfold Path, the first two steps, talk about connection. We're really one. There's one, not two. We're not separated. And our intention, the second wise intention, has to do with intention to not harm, to express loving kindness, and ultimately to express boundless loving kindness. So we've all expressed how maybe we're not all there yet, but we're working on inclining our behavior, our mind towards in that direction with that intention. And so this is the beginning of the Eightfold Path, which is the way to free ourselves from suffering. So if we think about it, we know that the Brahma Viharas and compassion, metta, are really important to our path. And the phrases that we are learning with metta and with loving kindness and with joy and equanimity help us develop and point us in that direction. We can start to see why the cultivation of compassion might be necessary to ending our suffering. Actually, when metta turns towards suffering, our own or others, it's called karuna. And Sayadaw Upandita, one of our teachers, Kamala Masters, said that Sayadaw Upandita never said metta by itself. He always called it metta karuna. So it might be hard, you know, there's so much suffering in the world that obviously metta is going to run into suffering and become karuna very easily. So they are closely linked. And I think that the Buddha, as I said last week, said that the most important person to give metta to is oneself. That's where we start. And so once we, if we're going to give compassion and we're having trouble, we can go back to metta for ourselves. And then we're better able to be there for the suffering. that we're encountering. When we are turning towards our heart and we're confronted with suffering, the natural response is to turn away from that. But what we're trying to do is stop and say, I care about this suffering, whether it's our own or someone else's. So we have to be with it. I care about this suffering. Expressing compassion brings its own kind of joy. And it has to do with vulnerability, which a lot of us don't feel like being vulnerable. But vulnerability leads to openness, to softening. So if we can get through that, and it leads to connection, and it leads to tenderness. So actually, compassion can be its own kind of joy. And I know in my experience, not all the time, but I remember times where I have suddenly been just stabbed. I've just felt so vulnerable and just kind of shaking. And then I see someone else that I normally wouldn't connect with very well, but all of a sudden I feel a connection to this other person. Or I hear about someone else who has a great pain or suffering, and I really know what that feels like. So I'm open. My heart's, they say, the trembling of the heart. So the heart is very responsive. And it's kind of an oxymoron, that vulnerability, because we try to protect ourselves from vulnerability, but actually vulnerability, when we're connected to our heart, is very powerful. So I'll give an example. I was at a retreat a number of years ago, and it was a really hard retreat for me because I had to keep talking in small groups with other people, and I had to keep being really truthful and kind of really exposing myself, and I just was suffering from that. Oh, I just felt like I just can't do this. And I would be in a group and I would think, oh, why did I say that? And then I'd think, it's hard to remember the specifics, but I remember I just wanted to leave. And at one point I said, my heart just cannot take this. It can't take any more of this. And I had this in my mind, I pictured this little red Valentine heart. It's breaking. I can't take it. And then all of a sudden, that image changed. And it was not this little one-dimensional red heart cut out. It was this really visceral, earthy, purple heart. And it was just so strong. And what a contrast it was to that little red heart. And I thought, yeah, that's right. That red heart is breaking, but I got another heart and it is really, really strong. And I continued, and that particular practice really helped me a lot because I was always very afraid of my image and I was always protecting it and worried about what other people were thinking. And I just kept going with that and being vulnerable and vulnerable, and it got less and less hard. It was really an opening for me, and I've never forgotten that image to me. Some people get things from words, but images are important to me, and I just remember that heart. It was just like, what would you say, infinite. It was really, really powerful, and it was very alive. It wasn't hard. It was very alive. So that was an example to me of compassion in action. Because compassion, being able to be vulnerable and then opening to that. However, there is a problem of overwhelm with compassion. I think we can all agree to that. Since to develop compassion, we do have to turn towards suffering. And we have a lot of defenses, and it's natural to have defenses against being overwhelmed. Pity is something that it's called the near enemy of compassion. And sometimes we may feel that we're being compassionate, but our pity kind of separates us from the suffering. So I know sometimes, like, I'll look at someone who is homeless and, you know, not doing well at all, and I can just hear in my mind, oh, that poor homeless person. I'm lucky that's not me. You know, it's just kind of like a separation. Or we can pity ourselves, and we can be really feel sorry for ourselves and just get really attached to that and identify with it. And that's not compassion. Grief is really a natural, healthy response to suffering. But if we identify with grief, and then it becomes something that we cling to, and then we start drowning in grief, it can be, well, starts harming us. So I personally haven't had big experience with grief, and probably I could, but I haven't gone there yet. You know, like, I don't want to go there. So, and it hasn't been forced on me. Well, maybe there have been times, but so I'm not speaking greatly from experience, other than I am speaking for things that I'm afraid would cause me grief, and so I don't get close to them, and I have a choice. But it can feel like it's just going to pull me down and I will never get out of it. So, the Buddha there's a story of the mustard seed, and probably a lot of you know that story of the woman who had tragedy after tragedy happen. Her husband died, her baby died, her parents died. It was this whole long story of just how can this person go on. And so this woman was grieving, and she had her dead baby in her arms, and she kept looking for medicine to bring the baby back alive, to cure it. And she went to the Buddha, and he said, if you go to go find a mustard seed, and I will cure your child. But you have to go to the houses and ask if anyone in that house has ever died in that house. And so she went to every door, and everyone said they could give her a mustard seed, but they had all experienced death. And so she finally realized that that this was not something that was just hers. She came to accept the fact that this was the human condition, and she was connected to everyone else who'd experienced death. And so she was able to let go and bury her baby. And in the story, she became a nun. But the idea is that the grief, compassion, being present for the suffering, there is a letting go of that too. And so overwhelming grief is not compassion either, because it's harming. And compassion is not harming. It's caring. So you'll be caring for yourself also. Compassion is also associated with action, because there's a desire to bring relief from suffering. So ultimately, compassion implies some kind of action, but we really need to discern what is the right action with compassion. And sometimes the answer is no action, just presence and just witnessing. So being present to someone's pain is hard, especially if it's someone you're really close to and care about. And I think I shared last week that that's hard for me when I see my daughter going through suffering. I really find myself, I mean, it's something I'm really working on because I just want to fix it. It's just so painful to see her suffer. But she's told me she just wants me to be there. She just wants to be able to go through it, you know? And she said, I can go through it. You know, this is just something I'm going through. Or she might want to explain it to me and just have me listen. And I know I don't want somebody to fix me either. So we can offer respect and really understand, yes, you're experiencing, it is hard. You know, just acknowledge, I know, it is hard, or I don't know, but I see you're really suffering. And it won't be like this always. We can say that because we know impermanence. So just being with it. Other times, there's amazing, spontaneous, immediate, selfless, heroic action that happens. And maybe you can remember some time in your life where you just did something because spontaneously you cared and you just acted. And that happens too. And I know we've seen it in the news. People have jumped onto tracks to save someone on the tracks. And maybe we say, well, I don't think I'd ever do that. I'd be so scared. But you don't know. So because it's our heart, you know, and it's an impulse, and when we're connected to our heart, it helps us tell us what the right thing to do is in this moment. So we don't know. And appreciate the times when you just see your heart just respond in a very compassionate way. And I know we've always, all of us, have experienced that. And then forgiveness. I found a forgiveness group of phrases, and I used them. A teacher gave them to me a number of years ago. I personally, because I'm so self-critical, really needed those phrases. And I put them on the website, so if you would like to use those, they're on the website. And there's also a tape with a guided meditation on forgiveness for yourself, for others. And asking for forgiveness. It's really a nice guided meditation, and so that link is on the website also. And I'm just going to read you the first couple of phrases because they were very important to me at the time. I allow myself to be imperfect. I allow myself to make mistakes. I allow myself to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive myself for the harm I have done to myself. And that was really helpful for me, especially the one, I allow myself to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. Because I would beat myself up for making mistakes, and then I just started saying, the learner. I'm a learner, and I'm still learning life's lessons. So, we're going to take a few minutes to have a guided meditation with compassion, and we'll start with compassion for the self, do a few minutes of that, because that is a really important place to start. And I just wanted to mention these books that I did not put on the website as resources. This is Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach, and this is the book that brought me to Seattle Insight Meditation. My best friend, I heard about it on NPR, and then she bought it for me for my birthday, gave it to me. I read it about four times, and then I went around saying, gee, I wish there was a place like that, because this woman, some of you may know, she leads the Washington, D.C. Insight Meditation Society, and I thought, gee, I wish there was a place like that in Seattle. And then about 2 years later, a woman in my book club said, oh, yeah, my husband Peter goes there. So that's when I started the intro class and haven't turned back. That is a really good book that has a lot of self-compassion. And the other is Self-Compassion by Kristen Neff. And there's trainings, and She's really well known. So, we'll start with a dear friend. No, we'll start with ourselves, and then we'll do a dear friend or family member. We're not going to practice with a difficult person today, but as extra credit on your homework, you can start by just thinking which people are difficult for you over the course of the week. One of the teachers, Kamala Master, says, I'm calling the difficult person a person who's difficult for you, not a difficult person. So that's something to think about. And some of you have already mentioned these, but you may try seeing, if you have a difficult person, you may try seeing them as an infant or a young child. It may be helpful to look for the good in them and focus on that quality. As you bring them into your heart, you may try looking at the suffering in them. Somebody mentioned this. Looking at the suffering in them that is causing them to be difficult for you. Then wishing that they be free of those qualities. So may you be free of hatred. May you be free of greed. May you be free of delusion. May you be free of suffering. Joseph Goldstein talked about the 9/11 incident, and he had a bunch of New Yorkers that weekend right after that at a retreat, and they were doing metta. And he said, they can't do may you be happy to these people who just killed thousands of people. So he said, but maybe many of these people, they were from New York, could say, may you be freed of greed. May you be free of greed, hatred, and delusion, because obviously those were impacting their behavior, and maybe you can go that far. So just some ideas about a person who's difficult for you. So now we'll begin the meditation. Take a moment to feel your place. Here, your feet on the floor, your hands touching your legs, perhaps, your eyes closed, sounds in the room, your breathing. This is a poem from Pema Chodron. When you begin to touch your heart or let your heart be touched, you begin to discover that it's bottomless, that it doesn't have any resolution, that this heart is huge, vast, limitless. Ask yourself, are you willing to turn towards your pain? Are you willing to get close to it? Are you willing to touch it with kindness instead of pushing it away? Feel the connection to your heart. Breathing into your heart. Feel what's there without judgment. Connect yourself as you are right now. Holding in mind the intention to be a friend to yourself. Feel your own deep wish for yourself to be peaceful, to be happy. May I be safe and protected. May I be peaceful. May I be happy. Now pause for a moment to open to your own suffering. Allow a pain or a sorrow, a discomfort that is present in your life to emerge. Notice where the experience is in your body. Notice its texture. See if you can turn toward it. If you can't look at it directly, that's okay. You can approach it slowly. You can just sit next to it. See if you can feel a sense of caring about your suffering. If the caring is not present yet, that's okay. This is about our intention to develop caring. If we don't feel it yet, we are setting our direction. The compassion phrases can help us incline toward accepting what we would rather push away, discount, or ignore. Repeat the phrases I say or a phrase that resonates for you. I care about your pain. Or you may say, I care about this pain. May I find peace. May I be happy. I care about this pain. I care about this pain. May I find peace. May I be happy. May I be free of suffering. Now pause for a moment to move from your inner focus on yourself outward to other beings. Bring to mind a dear friend or family member or benefactor. As you hold this being in your heart, get in touch with the sorrow, disappointment, or struggle that is present for them. Feel, if you can, your wish for them to be happy, to not suffer. Just like me, all beings want to be happy and to not suffer. Just like me, you want to be happy. You don't want to suffer. Being a witness, you could say, I can see your suffering. It's hard. It's hard. This is the way it is right now. This is not the way it will always be.